So let me ask, like, if the primary was tomorrow for you, how would you cast your ballot?
Well, I don't have to vote till March 17th, so I have time to sort this out. I really don't know. I really don't know yet.
This is Breaking News.
Welcome to How To. I'm Charles Duhigg. As the race for the White House kicks into high gear, we've discovered that most rare of things, a swing voter who is still very much undecided.
My name is Anthony. I am a high school math teacher.
And how old are you, Anthony?
I am 25 years old.
Okay. Tell me your voting history. Who did you vote for in, say, 2016?
Okay, so I did not vote in 2016.
Okay.
Much to, yes, I know, it's one of those, like, you know, shame on you for not voting. But it was partially a conscious choice just because South Park put it well, you know, in sort of the choice that I felt was I didn't really like either candidate.
And prior to 2016,
prior
so there
to
was
2016,
one cycle.
Yes.
Who did you vote for in the last presidential election?
In that presidential election, I voted for Mitt Romney.
Okay.
And I know many of my students will be shocked that that I didn't vote for Obama.
Why is that? Tell me about that.
So my school is, I think, 99% Black. There's some Latinx students as well, but given that I'm living in New York City, I think they just sort of assume that I am not Republican. And there's an example last year after Trump's State of the Union. I was watching it the next day, I went to go put my slides up on the board, and I hadn't switched over to the slides yet, and they saw just the video of Trump, and they're like, oh, I knew it. You're racist. You voted for Trump. And I was like, whoa, hold on. I'm just watching the State of the Union.
Anthony says politics doesn't come up a lot in his math class. But when it does,
ultimately, I want them to think critically on it themselves. So if they're saying, you know, oh, why are you watching the State of the Union? I'll say, well, why didn't you? I mean, don't you want to know what the president is saying? You know, if you're going to not like him, what's an alternative solution to this thing that he's proposing? Like asking questions that get them to think more about where their views are.
Recently, Anthony's been asking many of these same questions himself. He's now officially registered as an independent, and he's still not sure who to vote for in the 2020 election. Should he consider ideology or electability when he's casting his ballot? Should he follow his head or his heart? Maybe you're in the same boat. They're watching the debates and you're wondering, what's the right choice to make? To try and narrow it down, we're bringing in the big guns. Two veteran political advisors, one from each party, David Axelrod and Mike Murphy. Can their advice help Anthony and all of us make sure our vote counts this November? Stay with us.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Welcome back to The Lead. More now in our politics lead.
If you watch cable news at all, you're probably familiar with all the pundits trying hard to sound smart, but most often just trying to fill time because they don't have anything new to say. Which is why I'm so appreciative when I see our two experts today pop up on TV, because they usually do know what they're talking about.
Tonight is our friend Mike Murphy, veteran GOP strategist, longtime advisor.
Qualified people in the country to answer that question. David Axelrod, the former chief strategist for Barack Obama's presidential campaign.
And I think most people know you popularly as the guy who got Obama elected president of the United States. Is that fair?
Well, it is flattering. There were a lot of people involved, and I give the president some credit for it, too.
That seems fair.
Murphy, you there?
Hello, I'm here.
Hey, Mike. Thanks so much for taking some time.
Hello, Charles.
So let me introduce you guys to Anthony.
Hello, my name's Anthony.
Hey, Anthony.
Hi there.
The reason why we were hoping you guys would visit with Anthony is that Anthony had sort of written to us with a very specific problem.
Yeah, so I reached out with the question of how to vote with a conscience. And what really drove my question was that I am a Catholic, so a lot of my views are informed by Catholic social teaching, but I also am an Eagle Scout, so I care very deeply about the environment. And I'm a teacher, so I care a lot about education. And I felt like it was hard to find a political party, let alone an individual candidate, who could meet all the criteria that I was looking for. And that it felt to vote in support of one thing would sort of betray my morals in another area.
Well, first of all, listening to Anthony's recitation of his background, perhaps he should be running this year. He seems like a pretty wholesome guy. This head-heart kind of disparity is in many ways a fiction in my view, because what I find is that people tend to want to vote for a candidate, and the kind of head calculations, which usually go to electability and qualities like that, get rationalized. Bernie Sanders, for example, looks a lot more electable today than he did a month ago to those who are supporting him. I mean, I'm a romantic about these things. I would like to vote for candidates, and I liked to work for candidates who I admired and whose values I appreciated and who I felt some sort of connection. But let's turn to the hard-headed, cynical Mike Murphy and see what he has to say.
Well, Anthony, I agree with my friend Axelrod. You'd make a strong candidate. I would say this, as far as figuring out kind of where your heart is, only you can know that. I think maybe the best trick to meet halfway is to think about all the issues that the Congress could take up next year. And if you serve there, which would be the most important single vote you think you'd cast, and kind of work backward from where you think a candidate might land on that particular issue. Most elections in the presidential race are a referendum on the incumbent. Question one is, do you keep them or fire them? And then if you fire them, you know, who do you replace them with? So you've got to make that decision, because that is the biggest input of your vote. Now, you do have the same problem in New York that I, a fellow former Romney voter, have here in the blue state of California, which is the Electoral College is arranged in a way that is pretty much a predetermined outcome of who will win. Now, that means you should still vote, but your vote may not be as critical as your cousin living in Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania or Florida. So the other way you can affect an election beyond your vote, which is very important and everybody should vote, is you might be able to influence people in places where the vote really counts.
So let me ask a question. I imagine at some point in your careers, you've been looking at a field, and before it's clear who's going to be the front runner, you have to make a decision. Do I jump on the campaign of this person or that person? How do you make that choice?
Well, I had 150 clients over time, and, you know, not all of them would I nominate for Nobel Prizes. You know, some of them were people who I came to regret working for. Some campaigns I left. But in 2002, you know, I got a call from this young state senator who had lost a congressional race 2 years earlier by 30 points. He was broke. He was an African-American guy, and he wanted to run for the United States Senate. He was named Barack Hussein Obama. It was 1 year after the World Trade Center catastrophe. All of that, you know, worked against the idea that he could win. But what worked for it was just his qualities. He was an exemplary legislator. His values were good. His issues were issues that I cared about. And so I decided, even though I had offers from other candidates, decided to go with Obama. And he ended up winning going away because those things, those same things that appealed to me, it turned out appealed to a lot of other people. And so, you know, there were head considerations, but heart considerations as well in making that decision.
Mike, let me ask you, because you have been steadfast in criticizing President Trump. And I imagine the much more savvy thing to have done would have been to have either toned down your criticism or sat on the sidelines, or once it became clear that he was going to get elected, to there's certainly other folks who have gone from never Trumpers to ingratiating themselves a little bit. Like, why not do that? You're a professional. I don't think anyone would bemoan you doing the professional thing with the guy who's now running the entire party.
I appreciate it. I'm also Irish and stubborn, but you're right. Yeah, our firm used to have 20 people. Now we have a lot fewer. My accountant keeps trying to show me how many million dollars it costs not to get on the lucrative presidential incumbency payola, particularly in the Trump world where it's very commercially on. But it was an easy decision for me. I mean, when you start in this business, to kind of get to the main thrust of the discussion about, you know, head versus heart, you're like a young doctor. You just want to operate. You know, who's the candidate? What is he running for? Any money for TD? How long they've been out of prison? Okay, great. But in the presidential stuff, I was always for long shots who I thought would be the best president. And we generally lost. I was with John McCain in 2000, which was tricky for me because Jeb Bush and I are very close. I'd done both of his gubernatorial races. I'd worked for his father, George H.W. Bush. So I had a certain connection to the Bush family, yet there I was primarying him. You know, I don't regret those decisions because the presidency is important. And I think David would agree with this. That the thing about if you have success in a political career where you eventually start having some influence, there's always a mercenary aspect to it. But at the end of it, you want to look in the mirror and review a few decisions. And the decision on Trump, I don't think is hard. I think it's really easy. I don't think he believes in the rule of law. I think he's unfit. So I don't think there was another decision. And the most heartbreaking thing of the Trump era has not been whatever, you know, I did to blow up what was left of my career. It's more how few people have taken a stand on something that to me is very black and white.
So, Anthony, let me ask you, we're having this conversation right before Nevada and South Carolina, Super Tuesday's coming up. What are you considering right now? Is Trump someone you think you might eventually support? Are you where are you?
I'm definitely not supporting Trump at this time.
Okay.
I think there's other people that would represent America on the world stage a lot better, who would further the causes I care about better. Right now, not supporting him.
So who are you? Like, when you look at this field,
mm-hmm.
who are you conflicted over? Like, who do you like and where's the conflict for you?
So that's a great question. I was leaning towards Biden for a while. He's Catholic, but he's also very moderate and someone who's raised in a Republican family. He was definitely more attractive to me. However, in the last week or so, I've actually come to see a lot of positives in Amy Klobuchar. She said something along the lines of that the Democratic Party should be an umbrella for everyone. And in particular, she mentioned people who are pro-life and want to be represented in the Democratic Party in some way, and that they shouldn't, as a party, turn people away just because they disagree on this particular issue. And that was something I liked.
Can I ask a question? If this thing comes to New York, by the time it gets to New York and the choices between, let's just say, Michael Bloomberg and Bernie Sanders, neither of whom you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
would you have a preference in that contest?
I don't think I know enough about Bloomberg yet, but between the two, I would have to say Bloomberg, just because as much as I like Bernie Sanders' idealism, I just don't think a lot of his plan is feasible.
I went to a podcast and a focus group broke out. This was good.
Yeah. So let's take it one step further and say it was Sanders versus Trump. Would that open up the possibility of you voting for Trump, or would you be comfortable voting for Sanders?
I would be comfortable voting for Sanders. And I know one of the issues that really draws this divide for me is the pro-life issues, but I think Sanders' primary goals are not related to abortion. It seems what's more important to him is healthcare, economics, and those are things that I can definitely get behind.
Now he just has to figure out which specific candidate to get behind. When we come back, David and Mike will guide us through a few concrete steps on how to do just that.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough. This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
We're back with political strategists David Axelrod and Mike Murphy and our swing voter, Anthony. Okay, so I'm going to go through each candidate. Mm. Just give me like your gut reaction real fast, like a lightning round, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so Biden.
Sleepy.
Buttigieg.
Inexperienced.
Okay. Sanders?
Genuine, but radical.
Warren?
I don't know. I just don't like her that much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Klobuchar?
I want to see more.
Okay. Bloomberg?
I'm confident in his economics. I don't know enough about anything else.
And then Trump.
He scares me.
I'm hearing the dilemma of a lot of right-of-center voters who know that Trump is unfit, yet are ideologically uncomfortable with some of the things the various Democrats have been talking about because the center gravity in their party has been pulling left. We're about to have this big fight between Bernie and somebody, and you know we're in the process now of figuring out who that somebody is, be it Bloomberg or Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar or whomever. So that's the tension now, and you know that is a great opportunity, I think, for the eventual Democratic nominee, which is to send a little bit of a welcoming signal to voters like Anthony, who are not ready for the revolution, so to speak, but know there's a Trump problem to get rid of.
You know, one thing that the past decade should have taught us is a little bit of humility in making these summary political judgments. One of them is that, you know, Bernie Sanders would be an abject disaster and couldn't win. I think that's an open question, honestly. The one thing that I think people in politics do too little is listen. Mike joked about turning the podcast into a focus group, but people can be counterintuitive. So it's important to approach this with an open mind and try and understand how people are making their judgments.
And this kind of raises this question that I was wondering, which is, you know, both of you said, you know, you shouldn't have this. It's a false dichotomy to say follow your brain versus follow your heart, that in some ways you should like just listen to what matters to you and follow that path. But for so many of us, we don't actually know what matters to us, right? What advice do you have for people who are trying to figure out, like, how do I prioritize these things?
Well, it's hard because with each candidate, particularly for president, you kind of get a salad of things, which is certain issues they're very focused on, other issues they sort of have to be, you know, allegiant to based on the reality of the party. People are more complex than simple liberal conservative. You know, I always say, just imagine you're a congressman. What would be the most important single vote or piece of legislation you'd try to support if you had 2 years there? The other thing, what a lot of people do, voters, it's normal human psychology, is they just decide who sees the world the kind of the way what they would, because you're really voting for a proxy to make the decisions you're not going to make because you're not there. So what is their life experience, their character, their passion, their family, their experience? You just kind of sum it all up and say, all right, that's somebody I'm comfortable with representing me making those decisions behind the big desk.
So here's our first technique for choosing a candidate. To figure out what matters the most to you, think of yourself as a newly elected representative to Congress. What's the single most important issue that you want to take up? If you can only cast one vote, what's it going to be on? That will put things into stark relief pretty quickly.
I mean, I think it isn't just an equation about issues. It's also what Mike says, it's worldview and culture, whether you feel comfortable with the person you're voting for and the character of that person to do the right thing.
So let me challenge this a little bit, because I hear what you guys are saying and it makes a ton of sense to me. But let's say, just from my perspective, and let me just preface this by saying, I am not a fan of Donald Trump. I'm registered as a Democrat. And yet, under Donald Trump, my life has actually been pretty good. To be honest, like, the news media is doing pretty well. Stock market's gone up. I haven't been at the border, luckily. And I look at someone like Bernie Sanders, and I think to myself, Bernie Sanders, although he's not someone I would choose as my candidate, but if he was in the general, he's someone who agrees a lot more with my values than Donald Trump does. But he actually presents a real risk, I think, to my life. Like, he's going to tax me and the people in New York a lot. He could take away my health care. How should I parse through choosing a president based on character versus choosing a president based on my own self-interests? Because I should have the right to vote in my own self-interest, right? Even if it's for someone who I hate.
No, Charles, I don't think you should have that right.
No. We're going to tell you how to vote. The issue with Trump, the great challenge of the Trump era, especially for center and center right people who care about the economy and, as you say, their personal lives and how they're doing economically, is what is the moral tariff you are willing to pay for that? You know, if you're a computer and you're designed to pick your voting challenge purely on economic growth, then the machine without feeling or moral compass just beeps and says Trump has done well. But if you think about, and David brought this up earlier, character in office, who makes the right decision, and other intangibles like competence and the risk of incompetence, which could be catastrophic down the line in a foreign policy crisis, you just have to decide how big of a price are you willing to pay for some economic results. And that's a moral question that, you know, people have to look within and decide.
This is the next thing to think about. When you're trying to look beyond the issues, at some point, you have to judge a candidate's character. And sometimes that means calculating the moral tariff you're willing to pay. Because if you don't do that in advance, you might be surprised by the costs down the road. So I think that there's probably a number of Republicans out there who say, look, I did vote for Trump. And I didn't vote for Trump just because I'm rich and I want him to cut my taxes. I voted for him because even though I think he's personally distasteful, I actually think the moral thing to do is to vote for this guy because he puts the judges that I want on the bench. He upholds values. Even if he doesn't live by those values, he at least talks about those values.
I hear it all the time. It's basically, it's a low tax of personal disgust. I pay for policy victories. No, the vast majority of Republican voters are right now paying that tax without too much complaint.
So what would you say? Like, do you think those people are making the right calculation?
I would say they're not, but, you know, it's a free country.
So let me ask. So, Anthony, like, if you were in Congress, what's the one thing that would matter more than anything else to you? You could cast one vote in Congress.
Yeah, I think if I had to pick one issue, it would have to be the environment, in terms of the government stepping in and taking more control over what large companies and corporations are able to do in terms of pollution.
Okay.
And all that other
stuff. So let me ask you, Mike and David. So if Anthony's decided the environment's his issue that's going to guide most of his vote, how much time does he have to spend actually investigating Biden versus Klobuchar versus everyone else on the environment question? Because the truth of the matter is, if I go to their websites, they all love the environment.
But I think you also have to do a second level analysis, which is, who seems to have a plan to achieve it politically? I think Buttigieg deserves some credit here. I've seen his argument about how to kind of go about this, and it's well thought out and very credible. So you don't only have to pick what their goal is, but who has the best chance of achieving it, in your view.
Well, and the other piece of information that's important is not just what they say they will do, but how big a priority has it been for them in the past. If the climate change issue is new and they haven't done anything around the issue in the past, that seems to me an important indicator.
So the next tactic to help winnow your choices is to take a deeper look at candidates' policy plans. Then look to see if they've actually worked on those issues that are important to you in the past. Let me ask Anthony, what do you think of Buttigieg?
Yeah, my main concern with him is just that he doesn't have the experience that you know, granted he was a mayor, but I feel like there's a big difference between being a mayor in Indiana and being president.
Okay, so this is a great question, right? Because, and this was actually something that was raised about Barack Obama at various times, right? He'd only served one term in the Senate. How do you guys think someone should analyze experience? How important is having been a governor versus being a senator versus being a businessman who comes out of nowhere versus being a mayor?
Yeah, it used to be a lot more important. I mean, look, I am hopelessly biased on this question. And yet, one of the virtues of campaigns is that you do get to see how people handle all kinds of different pressure and all kinds of complex issues. And paying attention to campaigns is really an important part of this. Obama proved himself from the beginning of that campaign, when people were saying the things about him that Anthony is saying about Buttigieg. He proved himself through the campaign, 50 primaries against an array of opponents, dealing with all kinds of challenges. And by the end of it, these things were signals to voters that, yeah, I think he's up to this. And so campaigns matter in judging how people might function as a president.
Here's another important rule. Pay attention to how candidates run their campaigns. It might tell you how they're going to run the country.
I would not be looking for risk. I would not be looking for a revolution. I would not be looking to nominate a candidate that Trump can make the election about, because that increases risk and that deters from the overall mission of letting the country do what I think it wants to do, which is fire Donald Trump. So I might be a little timid, which means I would be looking at candidates who are unlikely to be easily turned into scary monsters. In other words, I wouldn't be for Bernie Sanders, though I agree with David. When the country is mad at the system, it elects Republicans like Trump and Democrats like Sanders. So I'd be trying to back down from that kind of horrible standoff and go with a little tamer, more centrist Democrat, be it an Amy, a Pete, or a Bloomberg.
So let's say we make it through the primary, and let's say we got Donald Trump versus Bernie Sanders. Is it moral for me to just stay home?
Well, it's certainly an option in our democracy to do that. We saw people do that in 2016. The reason Donald Trump is president is because of low turnout in some key areas. The reality is one of them is going to be president of the United States. And if you believe that the president of the United States is significant in terms of the impact on the life of the country, the life of the world, and your own, then it would behoove you to make a decision one way or the other.
My last question is, what's your opinion on independence, voting for someone who's not in one of the two parties?
I think that you want to vote for one of the candidates who is actually in contention for the presidency. You know, given the gravity of the times, I think a symbolic vote is a wasted vote. Anthony, you got to suck it up, evaluate these candidates, and cast a vote for one or the other in hopes that that person will become president.
Here's our last rule. It might be hard to do, but on election day, think of all those people who have fought for years so that you have the right to vote. And then review your options, think about everything you've heard, and go into the voting place and pull the lever for your favorite candidate, or at least the person you dislike the least. That's what America is all about.
So the question I had was, how to vote with a conscience. And I think in particular, the term that stuck out was that idea of moral tariff, that, you know, ultimately you're not going to find someone who is perfectly in line with the views that you hold. And that to vote for anybody who's not perfectly in line is to accept some moral tariff. You need to make a decision, but that decision needs to be one that you're going to be comfortable making. You know, sort of, can you sleep at night based on the choice that you make?
And so, with all these primaries coming up, hopefully we'll all make the right choice. Right for us and for the country. A week after we had this conversation, Anthony sent us this voice memo.
Hello, it's Anthony, just giving you my update. After everything I've seen after the Nevada caucus, as well as the debate last week, I am leaning a little more towards Pete Buttigieg. And that's with me taking into account the environmental policies as well. I think it's realistic, but well-rounded. As always, that's just how I'm leaning now. I mean, there's a lot of time to go before I have to make a final decision in the fall.
So candidates, there's still time to grab Anthony's vote. Thank you to Anthony for letting us into the voting booth with him, and to our veteran political prognosticators, David Axelrod and Mike Murphy. Make sure to check out their joint podcast, Hacks on Tap, and David's The Axe Files from CNN. Also, if you want to keep up with the twists and turns of the race for 2020, make sure to sign up for Slate's weekly campaign newsletter, The Surge. It's a smart and funny recap of who's up and who's down and why it matters. To sign up, go to slate.com/The Surge. Do you have a quandary that needs a creative solution? Send us a note at howto@slate.com and we'll do what we can to help. How To's executive producer is Derek John. Rachel Allen is our production assistant and Merritt Jacob is our engineer. Our theme music is by Hannes Brown. June Thomas is the senior managing producer of Slate Podcasts and Gabriel Roth is Slate's editorial director for audio. Special thanks to Asha Saluja and Sung Park. I'm Charles Duhigg. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to vote.